Welcome to The Church Planter's Life, a podcast exploring the possibilities and pain of starting a missional incarnational church. This podcast is a resource of the V3 movement. V3 is a grassroots training organization for men and women planters around the country. Thanks for tuning in as our host Matt Alexander leads the conversation.
Hey, welcome to The Planter's Life podcast. This podcast is powered by the V3 church planting movement. V3 exists to, we come along and we support, coach, train, offer resources for people who are called to plant a missional incarnational expression of the church. And that can be everyday people. It can be people who are in full-time vocational ministry. It can be someone who has is kind of doing it in a co-vocational or bivocational way. It can be people have a heart for their neighborhood and want to see kind of a fresh relational expression of the church birthed in their place and begin to live that out. So if that sounds like you or someone that you know, we'd love to chat with you about that. You can go to the website, which is thev3movement.com, to learn more about V3 and the training and resources we offer. And this podcast, we interview church planters who are in our training or have gone through the training and get some stories going about how they're working it out on the ground, the pain and possibilities of planting in a missional incarnational way. And today we're talking with Garrett Wolf from Chantilly, Virginia, who's a part of King of Kings Lutheran Church. I got it all. That was a mouthful. Chantilly, Virginia, King of Kings Lutheran Church. How are you, Garrett?
I'm doing well. It's grateful to be able to have this opportunity to join you and speak a little bit about this church planting journey and how V3 has been an important and critical part and component for that journey for me.
Awesome, dude. Yeah, maybe get us started. Talk a little bit about how you got going in church planting and talk to us a little bit about your context, about Chantilly and where you guys are. I know you're kind of in a process of planting kind of a second campus. You'll tell us all about that. So a little bit about your journey and a little bit about the context that you're planting in.
Sure. Well, I was on staff at another local congregation nearby as a minister to youth and children for approximately 7 years. And I had just kind of finished seminary and was really feeling called and pulled to further pastoral leadership and trying to figure out what that looked like in a lot of different ways. And so I began kind of researching, discernment, praying, kind of going on a spiritual retreat just to understand what God was doing, not only in my life, but the life of my family and what that may mean. And so it was during that journey that I started reading some books, including some by Alan Hirsch and David Fitch. And a colleague of mine introduced me to V3. And so I had a meeting with one of the V3 coaches, Mike Pumphrey, just to understand a little bit more about what V3 is. And eventually out of that conversation, really felt like that was the piece and nature and methodology of the church that I was lacking and yearning for having been in that more institutional church culture for 7 years and just feeling drained and worn out through the various programs and activities that were essentially a part of that culture. And so that was kind of my introduction to V3. Alongside that same year, there was an ecumenical service that a couple of different churches hosted for Thanksgiving in our area. And it was in that process that I was representing that other local congregation I was a part of, that one of the other pastors asked if anybody knew anybody that would be willing to plant a second campus or plant a new congregation. Just happened to be right where I live currently. And so it was kind of a year discernment and conversations with that pastor and what this could look like, but also because that main campus, I would say, has a more institutional feel, to say that this second campus, what would it mean to be really use a non-traditional methodology and approach that is more kind of postmodern and understanding what it looks like to be the church instead of do church.
Yeah.
And so it kind of wrapped up late, I'd say midway through 2018, where I ended up accepting a call to that other congregation, which is, it's King of Kings Lutheran Church, but the main campus is called that. And the new campus, we're just using a unified name. And so I've been there since about August 2018. And part of my first couple months and have been spent just building that relational trust for that congregation to get to know me more, get to know about basically a non-traditional methodology of what it means to use missional communities and what does that look like. And so it's kind of training and equipping them as well at the same time, helping them remission and understand what it means to not necessarily gather and extract people to be church, but to take a more incarnational approach from a main campus perspective. And so a lot of that first couple months were spent doing that. And then the initiative for the second campus has kind of taken off at the beginning of this year. And this is January 2019. Yeah. And at the time of we're recording this, it's early on in May 2019. And so we've been at this really about 4 months of trying to create and develop a new campus using a missional community mentality.
Yeah.
And I'll say our context is we are about 45 minutes kind of southwest of Washington, D.C. And so that should give us a little bit of context. And I would say if anybody is familiar with massive suburbia, that is exactly what we're in. And so just a lot of residential homes, communities, and Loudoun County is specifically the county that I'm in, and it continues to be, along with Fairfax County, one of the most not only prosperous but growing counties in the entire nation. And so that's kind of the context in neighborhoods that I live in and that this community is being planted in.
Yeah, so lots of people moving into the area. Am I hearing you right with that? The area is growing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's growing. And I would say it's also a highly diverse area.
Okay.
Just some of the demographics of our region, because it's growing so substantially, and we are kind of a suburb of DC where a lot of people commute,
right.
Or at least telework. It's an extremely diverse area. In fact, one of the kind of the beautiful things I see about this area is they predict in about 2025 or 5 or 6 years, this area will be a minority majority. And so the population and kind of demographic of this area will be just that diverse, which I think is just an incredible and beautiful thing, because it's representative of so many different ethnicities, cultures, and all across the board, just to me, things that we can potentially live into that really look more representative of God's kingdom, and what it looks like.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. I love it. So you've kind of been on this journey for a while, but it's really just been the last 4 months in a lot of ways that you've started to kind of work this out on the ground in a more tangible way. And you have I think a really beautiful and unique story of, you know, you're trying to plant a missional incarnational expression of the church. That's focused on missional communities, but are being sent out by a church that's, you know, more institutional, more traditional in a lot of ways. And you guys are finding ways to work that out together in kind of a synergistic type of way. I mean, that's really cool. Really beautiful.
Yeah. And that was one of kind of the blessings and the giftings of this unique call. Cause it really is helping a more traditional congregation, that is more institutional, help them remission themselves and understand what it means to not call church what we do on Sunday mornings for an hour,
right?
But really to mobilize and encourage people to go out and be the church wherever they are. And so it's helping them through this journey of church planting rethink how they can be the church as well. Mm. And so it's an exciting yet daunting journey. So, and I tell people, a lot of people, that sometimes I feel, not just from kind of a more institutional church model, but also because missional communities and missional incarnational mentality methodology is still relatively being birthed and being shaped and formed, that a lot of times I feel like I'm in a snow globe, because I'm that person that's kind of shaking things up in a way from a main campus, and also just from post-Christendom context, and kind of shaking things up. And a lot of people are just kind of looking in that snow globe and hearing to see what's going on and what's going to happen.
Right. That's cool. So. That's cool. Oh, that's a cool analogy to think about. So here's a question I always ask when I'm interviewing somebody, a church planner, is, let's say I came to immerse myself in the life of your community for a month, and just said, Garrett, I want to eat it all up. I want to experience everything. I want to be involved in the missional community. I want to spend time in the neighborhood, in the area. I want to do everything that is central to the life of this young church plant. What would I experience? What would be some of the rhythms, maybe, could be a word we could use, that I would get engaged with over the course of that month? What would it look like for me to follow Jesus alongside you guys?
Sure, sure. And I think some of this is still new, so we're still shaping and forming some of these practices and rhythms. Yeah. One of the ones that we've really engaged in, and it's nothing new, but just the dinner church model.
Yeah. Great.
And so we've hosted, that's kind of how we started it, and we've hosted January, February. We're now approaching our fifth one. And I will say, we were meeting at a restaurant and kind of gathering at a restaurant, not necessarily for dinner, but for brunch.
Okay.
And so within that restaurant, we were letting the restaurant offer a brunch buffet, and the restaurant was gracious enough to let us gather in that space and have basically conversations over over tables and over a meal. And so we would have a very brief welcome, a prayer and a blessing over the food and our time together, and just kind of a general 2 or 3 minute theme and message that we were going to kind of cover in that space. And then on the tables, we would have prompts to have questions with amongst and based on that theme. And so for us, one of the things that we found in our community is, again, it's where we found the most life and most conversations, and just how we got to know people more, was over a table and a meal. And so that's one of the things that we have just embodied on a regular basis. And now, granted, we're doing this on, that's kind of, I would call that our more personal space. To gather, and we were gathering around 50 to 60 people within that, those few months that we're doing it. And I say, unfortunately, our space has kind of just recently had to take a pivot, just because the restaurant had some issues that it was encountering. And so we had to kind of pull out of that space at the request. And so we're actually just this month going to start in a recreational facility. So it's just a community recreation center, and rent space in there, and offer, move our brunch into a dinner, and offer a dinner church environment, but use the same mentality and same approach.
Yeah.
So that's one of the core aspects to rhythms and practices to our church.
And in addition, is that every week? Is that every other week? How often do you guys are doing that right now?
So right now, temporarily, it's just once a month.
Yeah, cool.
And so that's kind of a personal space. We've developed a social space, a public space within that same restaurant. And again, that's just to make us and help us be visible out in the community. And for that, it just really came as simple as to hosting a teen trivia night at that restaurant. And so letting people, we just kind of, the restaurant lets us come in and just host it. And sponsor a trivia night on behalf of the community. And it has nothing to do with religion or any type of preaching, or it just we're offering a space just to be present, and to people, let people know that we exist, and just to learn more about us if they want to. Otherwise, just come enjoy the company, the food, and just enjoy the camaraderie over a trivial pursuit, but done in a restaurant, pretty much.
Yeah.
Cool. And so, oops, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's great. Yeah, keep going.
And so that's kind of more of that. That's the public space right now. And then the more personal space gets together on a weekly basis. And for that right now, it's really just an understanding. And I'll say it's been a deconstruction space of the more institutional church model, and deconstructing some of the language, some of the notions of what evangelism is, and just what it means to live into a missional incarnational community. And so just because a lot of the people that have been a part of that more personal space have had church backgrounds, at least for right now,
yeah.
They may not have been attending church just because they've been hurt by it or because of their kind of seeking, but didn't want to be a part of that more formal structure.
Right.
And so they've either attended like the trivia night or they've attended one of these brunches or the dinner church. And they just kind of want to have a deeper understanding, a space of what it means to be a part of this community, like you said. And so that meets on a weekly basis. Sometimes there's a meal involved where we sit together with a meal and just understand each other's highs and lows, seeing and just hearing and being conversing with each other and knowing what's going on in each other's lives. How can I be in prayer for you? How can you be in prayer for me?
Mm-hmm.
And just keeping in touch that way. And then usually there is a little bit of discipleship conversation around either led by me or by another kind of a leader around some of those topics, which I already talked about, just, and a lot of it's been deconstructing essentially what it means to be evangelism today. Because a lot of what people thought or at least think evangelism is going into a place and getting people to know the ABCs of, or the Romans Road, or do you know where you're going to go today if you die, type of evangelism. And it's breaking down a lot of that into understanding what it means to be and model more relational evangelism.
Yeah.
Going into a community and being present and listening, observing, learning, and having conversations with people.
Yeah. I love it. Very cool. So, and four months in, kind of officially, practically so far, what's been maybe the most life-giving thing to you, or something that has been really, really life-giving to you so far? And what's been life-draining? What's cultivated anxiety in you, or difficulty, fear? Where has there been both possibilities and pain kind of in the midst of the journey so far?
Sure. Well, let me start with the life draining aspects. I'll kind of start there and then move into some of that life giving. But for me, you know, and just from a fivefold standpoint, I'm more of an apostle evangelist.
Yeah.
And so some of the personal life draining things on me has been more of the administrative work.
Okay. Yeah.
Just because I'd rather be out there and you know, investing and creating new spaces to take the church into. But it's been kind of the need for constant communication, which is absolutely necessary. And just the administrative aspects of just doing some of the lead work in order to make some of these events happen. But also living in suburbia, I'll say just from our own context, what drives a lot of people's schedules is their kids' activities. And kids' activities, whether it's sports, hobbies, or whatever else, it drives people's schedules. And so it's been extremely tough to find and create kind of that personal space where people can gather on a weekly basis, at least for the time being, to help have some of these conversations and get people to understand what it means to model and embrace a missional incarnational methodology of being the church.
Yeah.
And so it's just been, and so trying to find that regular rhythm and practice day and time has been just extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just a lot of time constraints built in with that. At the same time, some of the most life-giving aspects have been those kind of aha moments that occur when people actually understand what a missional community is. And the fact that we can go back to scripture and look at the ministry and the life of Jesus and the disciples, apostles after that, and say how that resembles more of a missional, incarnational way of ministry, as opposed to probably the more institutional models of church that they had come from.
Yeah.
And so it's those aha moments of people understanding and getting it that have been some of the most kind of life-giving, and I think the most meaningful, as we are very early on in venturing down this road.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Thanks for sharing that. What, maybe talk a little bit about how others so far, you know, if we in the training, in the B3 training we do, we talk a lot about the difference between kind of the church as industrial complex and the church as movement. And, you know, a simple maybe way of articulating both is the church as industrial complex is going to typically focus on consolidating and building up resources, consolidating whether that's financial resources or people resources or whatever. It's going to be focused on kind of building this thing, building stability amongst this probably one particular church community, building safety, stability, credibility, resources, and kind of focusing them in. Church's movement is going to be more of a dispersing of resources, people, focus. It's much more kind of relationally driven. It has probably a little bit more of an organic impulse, although there is structure to it, but probably has a little bit more of a flexibility and an agility to it in some ways as well. And as we know, like, the church in the West has historically really embraced and focused on kind of this more institutionalized approach of kind of consolidating resources to build this thing over here rather than kind of dispersing people, empowering people in that type of way. What has been your experience so far in living this out with trying to embrace more of this movemental approach? Have you found folks are gravitating towards that, or that there's a lot of deconstruction that's needing to go on? And even in your own life, in your own leadership, because we're all kind of, you know, we're all swimming in that current. We've all been formed in that way. So I even find myself like, oh, I still like this. I still gravitate at times towards this and have to find ways to deconstruct it to embrace something new. So does that make sense, kind of what I'm asking?
Yeah, no, it makes absolute sense. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think we were talking about in some senses, or one of the questions that sometimes we think through is like, what do I wish I knew before entering into this journey?
Yeah.
And I think what you're hitting on for me is how strong and how much of a pull the church as industrial complex or church as institution has a grip on us. Mm. And that's me included, because as we deconstruct, yes, we're deconstructing, but then as we try and think through some of the missional and incarnational ways that we want to be the church out in the community, even sometimes in that thinking, we still get pulled back into, well, we need to consolidate our resources and create this, you know, church worship gathering on 1 hour on a Sunday, because that's what people are going to demand and that's what people think as church. And so we need to go be a model in that space. And so even as we try and deconstruct, and I'm guilty of this too, it's that pull on us is still firmly in place. And some of that I think too comes from just the outside pressure. Sure. Because I can tell you, when I go and share people that, you know, I really don't like church planting, to be honest, because I think the language of church planting, I should say, because I really like saying I'm a mission developer, or I'm a mission mobilizer, because really God is the one doing the work of planting this church and this community. And so to kind of put me in that place is not, in my sense, not always right in the language that we share. But sure. When I go out and tell people that we're creating a new community of faith in Loudoun County, the first two questions I get are, where is it and when does it meet?
Yeah.
First two questions, guaranteed 99% of the time. And so because of that strain and pressure on other people, because they are interested, but that's what they think of church. And so because of that pressure and strain, that desire is there, it automatically creates us to want to meet that quote unquote need.
Yes.
Which just pushes us back into kind of that more of church's industrial complex type of nature and methodology. And so it really is a constant fight and a constant struggle and strain to get ungirded from that and no longer let that be like the bridle in a horse's mouth that's steering us in the way we should go. And so it's absolutely hard. And so some of the ways that we're, you know, continuing to live that out is we finally just kind of created that discipleship core or a DC. Mm-hmm. There's five of us that are kind of helping dream and vision and think through some of these practices that we're looking at and asking the question, why, what's the pull to create that space, or what's the purpose or intentionality of it? And is the intentionality just because we're trying to, feed that church, the industrial church nature? Or are we truly trying to create this space as more of, we want to be present with those who are in our community? And what does that look like?
Yeah, that's great. Very cool. Very cool. What would you tell somebody? What would you tell somebody who maybe is coming from a similar background as you? In a way of the most primary experience that you've had has been in more of an institutional type of setting, but they're beginning to sense a draw, a call, and maybe just an interest at this point, towards a way of being the church that is a bit different than what they've experienced. It's maybe a bit more focused on relationship, maybe a bit more focused on place, a bit more focused on creating vulnerable but tight-knit community, on maybe reaching people who they are recognizing are not being connected to the church in any type of tangible way. They're starting to grapple with it, but they're having a hard time kind of making that shift or moving into practice of beginning to move towards actually cultivating something. How might you encourage them? How might you challenge them to take a step in some type of concrete way?
Yeah. One of the things I think that was pertinent for me, and still I'm trying to train myself, is language, and trying to transform the language I use, including saying things like, oh, I'm going to go to church today. Mm. Which is totally false, you know? And so just training ourselves on the language or how we define things is completely needed to help embrace this kind of new methodology.
Yeah.
And being able to model that to others, I think is extremely difficult, because we still, I so easily fall into saying I'm going to church, or I'm doing this where, what we're creating this program or activity, which has a more attractional nature to it,
right,
as opposed to trying to just live into what is already taking place in and around me, within my own neighborhood, within my own streets, and looking for those, you know, what's existing in your parish in order to collaborate and partner with, including those who are already doing amazing work, and looking for those people of peace. And I'll say part of, and this is my own history and experience, is part of what I did originally, and this I did this with my wife, is we just hosted our neighbors and our friends over to our house for five kind of gatherings. And this was churched, unchurched people. It was a diverse group of people. But we just asked them to help us understand our culture more within our context more. Mm-hmm. And so we asked them, you know, what are some of the pain points that you see? What are some of the stresses and anxieties that you encounter in daily life?
Yeah.
And what do you think your neighbors or communities experience? And then we also asked them, well, also, what do people live for? What is the purpose of going to work every single day? Why do you go to work every single day? Obviously to earn money. Okay. But what are you trying to earn money for? And that led into understanding, okay, what are the hopes, the dreams, and the desires of these people and our neighbors? And what does that look like? And then based off of understanding these hopes and dreams, that just gave us a little bit of insight into the culture and the nature of our own context. And I'll say just openly, a lot of people's hopes and dreams centered around their kids within our area. Mm-hmm. But for us, when we drilled down into it, it was asking, well, okay, you want your kids to have a better life than you did. Well, inherent in that means what happened in your own life that you want them to have a better life.
Yeah.
And so to kind of, as much as they were willing to dig deeper into that, to understand, okay, this is where some of that brokenness and the hurt and the needs of people that are existing. And is that a space that as a church planner or as a missional or incarnational church that we potentially would want to speak into, and how, in what ways? And so it's really engaging the people around us and learning and discerning and observing what is going on and just where the Spirit is moving and how the Spirit is calling us.
Yeah. Great. I love it. Super fun. What would you, Les, I'm going to kind of bring us, pull it in here. If people wanted to stay connected to you or in the church planning journey you guys are on, or hear more about how you guys are experimenting with things, working things out in your place, how could they do that online, a website, a Twitter? What would be the best way to do that?
Sure. I mean, the website's our best probably resource. I'm going to be perfectly honest, I'm not the greatest social media guy.
Yeah.
I like following people, but I'm not the best at posting information out there.
Yeah.
So the website is really our best resource. And so you can go, it's just kofk.org, which will take you to our kind of the main campus. And we have a sub website, which is dulhessouth.kofk.org. So www.dulhessouth.kofk.org. And you could kind of follow us along there and get more information about what we're doing and where we're taking risks, where we're failing, and also what we're learning from that.
Good stuff. Thanks for hanging with us today, Garrett. Appreciate you sharing your journey and the stories that are popping up for you. Again, if you want to learn more about V3 and different ways that we're trying to support people to plant churches, but also just to be missionaries in their place. Maybe you're not sensing a call to plant something, but you want to be resourced to be a more effective disciple maker and follower of Jesus in your place. We do all sorts of different trainings and equipping and coaching, and would love to come alongside you and support you. You can go to thev3movement.com to learn more about V3 and what we're up to. Thanks.
We hope you discovered something meaningful in this podcast for your church planting journey. To connect with our training, tribe, and tools, go to thev3movement.org.